Well, and the other thing we were talking about yesterday is just acknowledging that you're nervous is much better than trying to pretend like, oh, I'm not that nervous. Like, I feel good. You know what I mean? And so that's kind of how I felt on the Monday. Like, I was, I told my fiance I was nervous. I told my parents I was nervous. I told Alex I was nervous. And I really was, and I didn't get off to a great start. But once you can kind of dial in, focus on the task at hand, and if you're playing good golf, you can still play good golf while being nervous, right? So,
Welcome back to The Grind. It's been a while, so thanks for listening. Austin Truslow, great story, is this week's guest. Hasn't teed it up in a competitive event in 21 months after injuring himself on a 5-iron in Las Vegas in 2021 and the Korn Ferry Tour. Lost his grandpa this weekend, and Monday qualified at Sony. And it's just a great story. Austin kind of walks us through the medical exemption process, which I'm sure most of us don't know. I didn't know a lot of the details, what it means, what having a medical means as far as starts. It's zero. And just kind of what is ahead for him and what this process has been like. So really nice of Austin to join us on a week where it's pretty hectic. Although Wednesdays, there's a pro-am and you don't have access to the course, but he woke up early, recorded with us. Austin and I have stayed in touch throughout his injury process, and just a really good dude. And super talented, really played well. Monday qualified a ton back in 2019, and it's great to see him back out there. So before we get into the interview, want to thank Golf Tech. I usually have my Golf Tech hat on, but I have my Chicago Golf Tour hat on today. Golf Tech, great place to get lessons all over the country. Look for the nearest ones near you. GolfTech.com, huge supporter of The Grind, coming out in a week, 2 weeks. Huge supporter of me. They're an awesome company and have been a huge part of us. Without further ado, here's Austin Truslow, and thanks for listening. All right, Austin. How does it feel? It has been 2 years, basically, that you haven't played competitively. Your first competitive round back, you Monday qualify into the Sony Open.
Yeah. I knew I was playing well heading into the qualifier. I've been, keeping close track of my scores and working really hard and kind of building up to just be ready to go January. And I put a lot of pressure on myself in this event. And I think I felt more nervous than normal, one, because I haven't competed, and you never really know how you're playing until you deal with like the stresses of competing. But I also just had high expectations because I've been shooting great scores and, playing really good golf the last couple weeks leading into the event. So I think the most pressure you put on yourself is really not circumstantial, but based on your own expectations.
To get to this point, we have to start kind of back in 2020. So you were playing the Asian Tour, got status on the Korn Ferry Tour. You had Mondayed into at least one PGA Tour event, the Rocket, right?
Yeah, I played four PGA Tour events in 2019, which I was planning to do a full Asian Tour schedule in 2019 because I won Q School there in 2018. But then I was able to get a spot in Puerto Rico. Funny enough, I won an event there in October the previous year. And I went over there thinking if I won, I'd get an exemption. But once I got there, they told me that it was, only Puerto Rican locals that would win would get the exemption. And I played great golf and won that week. And then I just kind of lobbied over the next 4 months for a spot.
Yeah.
And they eventually gave it to me, and I flew over from Perth, Australia, after missing the first three cuts on Asian Tour. And, I love that golf course. I played the AJGAs there as a kid. I played a couple other events there, and I played well that week. I had hole in one on the 16th hole on Sunday, and then made about a 24, 25 footer for birdie on 18 to get in on the number, then got in a Honda, missed the cup I won at Honda, but then, you know, with the FedEx Cup points that I gained from Puerto Rico, and then also having made a cut, you know, you don't have to do the pre-Qs for the Monday. So it made more sense to me, if I wanted to be in the United States, to keep doing the Monday qualifiers and kind of give up my Asian Tour status. And so I played a couple more events on the Asian Tour, but the rest of the summer I really spent doing the Mondays, and I got in the John Deere and the Rocket Mortgage. And I mean, I didn't make any of those cuts. And then, so I didn't get any benefits from the FedEx Cup points, but my game was in a good place going into Q school. So I did Q school, you know, didn't get full status, missed full status literally by the last shot on the course at Q school. I finished T41. The last guy on the golf course made birdie on 18 to bump a bunch of us out.
Yeah. I think there was 10 or something like that. I think it was like, there was a bunch of guys that would have got guaranteed starts.
Yeah, it was crazy. And so we, you know, it was still decent status and I knew I'd get starts, but I had to Monday, you know, I did have to Monday later, but didn't get in the Bahamas events, got in Panama, made the cut, you know, didn't have a great finish, but that kind of helped my status. And then I Monday and then tried to do some Mondays, but then I got on my number, played a little bit better. And then, you know, I had three top fives, finished the season at 42nd. So I was in a good position going into 2021.
Yeah. So COVID hits, you come back. And if I remember right, first event back, you slam your hand in the trunk on Thursday, right?
No, it wasn't in the trunk. I read that happened, yeah. But it wasn't the trunk. It was the bathroom, like, stall.
Oh, okay.
It was silliest. Right. The doors at that golf course are, like, really thick. It's not like your little flimsy, like, doors. Yeah, yeah. And so, like, I was, like, half asleep, and I just shut it in there. And, the finger was fine a week later, but it was – I couldn't really grip it afterwards.
And that kind of started, Austin, basically – like just a string of bad luck that has finally ended basically now. So I saw Austin in Las Vegas. I was caddying for Mark. Mark was the first alternate. We were just out on the golf course walking around waiting for us to get in. And on like a Tuesday or Wednesday, and we see Austin, and his caddy ended up having COVID, right? Am I have this timeline right?
Yeah, well, it's even... Yes, there are a lot of things that happened even before that event in Vegas. Like, the beginning of my season was unbelievable.
Like, walk us through it, because I remember there was just a horrible string of bad luck.
The first event, yeah, I shut my finger in the door, couldn't grip the club, tried to swing, never realized I just wasn't going to be able to do it that day, so I had to withdraw. I mean, it wasn't the end of the world. I knew I had full starts. So, and I lived 50 minutes from the course. So I just went home, you know, not that it sucked, but it was like, okay, you know,
yeah,
we'll be back in a couple weeks.
Sure.
And then about a week later, I was at my friend's charity scramble, and a guy shanked a 5-iron from about 40 yards away from me, and it hit me directly in the ankle.
I remember that. That's right.
On the bone, and I couldn't walk for about 10 days, and it was sore for 6 months, like, because I had such bad bone bruising. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't practice for, you know, between the finger and the ankle. I didn't really get to practice between the first event and the Louisiana event. And then I go up to Louisiana. I tried switching to the new golf ball that week too, and I wasn't hitting it well, and I didn't know how much my ball was spinning, and I had my worst ball striking week of like the 2-year season. Missed the cut there. I then go to Savannah, switch back to the old ball, find something in my swing. I was T7 heading into the weekend, but I got sick. I got COVID Friday night, and I had a pretty high fever. I didn't feel well. I didn't know whether it was COVID, and selfishly, I just wanted to play the weekend because I was in a good position.
Yeah.
So I played the weekend. Didn't feel great over the weekend. Played okay Saturday, but Sunday I think I was exhausted and just didn't play great. So I finished like T46. Then I drive to Destin, and then I test positive for COVID in Destin. So I can't play Destin. I got to isolate for, I think it was 10 days at the time. So I didn't play golf for the next 10 days. Then I kind of try to grind to get ready for Vegas, go out to Vegas. And then I have, you know, severe wrist injury in Vegas.
So I see you in Vegas. Can you talk us through the shot? Do you remember the specific shot, Austin?
Yeah, it was the 18th hole of the day. It was a short par four. You probably remember it. It was downwind. You kind of had to hit like a five iron off the tee to hit short of the bunkers with how firm it was. And I was coming down on the five iron and I had a lot of lean and I hit down on the ball. Like I hit the ground hard. And then the club passed the hands immediately, you know, kind of like as if you were like falling on your hands. It was kind of that like cup motion like this. And I felt a pop at the top of my hand and it was immediate, like, you know, tremendous pain. And I couldn't grip the club after that. So I played the rest of the hole one handed, made double, got in the clubhouse. And then I tried to like evaluate whether I could play the next day, but I knew it was something more than just your kind of, you know, hard hit shot.
And that kind of took you on a high, like a journey of like, you're trying to, I mean, any pro golfer, the thing is like rest and then try to play through it.
Yeah.
Like you don't, the last thing you want to do is do surgery. And, you know, I think a lot of people think that guys that play on professional tours have like access to a bunch of the best doctors in the world or whatever. You're like, just go on to your regular doctor. You don't have anything. So eventually you get to the point that you need to have surgery, right?
Awesome. Yes. Yes. I went to a couple, you know, notable experts in the field over the next month, and had, you know, two cortisone injections, and figured that that would be kind of enough to at least get me through 6 months. Cause that's kind of what they, you know, the understanding is if it's not too severe of an issue, those things will, you know, will wear off between 3 and 6 months. And it still wasn't good. You know, I just taking the club back, the top of my hand hurt because I didn't realize it, but I had torn my scapula lunate ligament and the dorsal capsule. And because the first image is sometimes the MRIs don't pick everything up, but I went up to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, you know, saw one of their top guys there. They have the best imaging there is. And, you know, it became obvious just in this personal screening that there was something wrong with it. And, you know, they found that. And, you know, the only real solution is, you know, to fix it long term would be to kind of reconnect the tissues and the ligaments. So that's what I decided to do.
So that ended your season. At the time you left Austin, at the time you were injured in Vegas, I mean, you were having a solid season. You already had a T3. It was an extended season. You had a runner up. Like, you're playing okay. I mean, there was times that you weren't playing well, but overall, yeah. I mean, you were playing solidly. And I think you were like 75th, 76th or something like that in points when you got injured. Is that right?
No, I think I was in the high 40s, low 50s when I got injured.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing that was tough is I knew that if I could play one or two events and get a few points, I would finish the 2 year season inside the top 75, which would then keep my card. Because I, even though I didn't play, you know, the rest of the season, and I also missed a lot of events the previous year with my status, I still finished 85th, which was good enough to keep, you know, decent conditional status and get into the finals at Q school. But, you know, because I couldn't play, I didn't get to go to the finals at Q. I didn't play finals at Q school, and I didn't get, you know, the better medical that I would have received if I was able to play and could finish in the top 75.
So walk me through that process. I mean, you and I have talked a lot because understandably you've been frustrated through this medical process. I had no idea that you had to, the person who directly makes the decision on this is the CEO of the Korn Ferry Tour. So kind of walk me through what your process was to try to get a medical. Awesome.
So the head of the Korn Ferry Tour makes a decision when it comes to like appeals for specifically for Q school, which is what I did this fall. There's a board that makes a decision in terms of the medical, and in a typical season, if you play 12 events or less, you will, you know, with full starts, you will get back the starts that you missed. And in the 2021 year, you know, it was complicated with COVID and that they combined the two seasons, but I had full starts in 2021. And, you know, they recognized this in January. I got, you know, thankfully I got full medical coverage. I got all the top 75 benefits. And I qualified for disability insurance, which I wouldn't have if I didn't have full starts. Mm-hmm. So they had recognized I had full starts, you know, in every way. So when I got injured and understood I'd played less than 12 events in that year, being 2021, I was thankful and assumed that I would get back those starts when I returned to play.
So when you start this process, Austin, I assume you have to think, considering all that you just said, like you had full medical, you're like a full member, that mm-hmm. this process is basically going to just be bureaucratic. You're going to get through it and you're going to get a medical. Like there was nothing leading up to that point that would make you think that you were going to be denied, I would assume, right?
Yes. So I'm technically on a non-exempt medical, meaning I have a card and I have a certain amount of allowable events to earn X amount of points, but the allowable events doesn't mean I'm in events. It just means I'm allowed to play six events to earn top 75 points to kind of go up a category and, you know, reshuffle back in and get more starts. Whereas a special medical would, you know, grant back the starts that I'd missed. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge, obviously a very, you know, very big difference. And it was the ruling, which, you know, it's unfortunate, but the ruling was based on really considering a 2-year season the same as a 1-year season. Whereas, you know, I think that they should have adjusted it for the double year, whether that means a percentage of total events, which in a normal year, 12 out of 26 events is, you know, just under 50%, which even, you know, with the 20 events I played in those 2 years, it was still well under 50% of the whole mm-hmm. season. And, you know, I'd only played 3 events in 2021. So if you took the 12 start rule there, I'd easily qualify, but it was because of the 20 total events, because of the 17 events I played in 2020, which they denied me the special medical.
And to give people some perspective of what that means, like for Austin now to have his 6 events, it's going to be most of the time last minute, because his non-exempt category will be way down the list. So he'll get into like random events and it'll be kind of last minute. So now
I won't get in any events.
Okay.
I'm like 85th alternate for the first event. Like I won't get in. No, I have worse status. I have pretty much the worst category. So I have to Monday. There are no starts. Yeah.
So
they
like
say allowable events, but it's not like
your allowable events that you'll never get into.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like yeah. You're going to Monday in, and then again, so to give people some perspective, he like if you Monday in, then that counts as one of his events, and mm-hmm. now he has 6 events to make X amount of points to get back to his full status. So the pressure of like there's Monday's pressure anyway, but now you're in an event, there's pressure anyway, but now he's basically up against the clock. And I most golfers that I've talked to, and I'll ask you, Austin, is like most players hate to have a number that they know they have to hit. It just adds more pressure rather than just like, hey, I'm going to go play well and we'll see what happens. You have this like, you know, 90 points hanging over you all the time. So, you know, like this putt is for this point, many points, and that putt is for this many points. Right. I'd assume.
Yeah, there's definitely that, because, you know, you can look at the sheets put out by the PGA and Korn Ferry Tour and know, you know, what finish equals what amount of points. And you have a number that they give you based on because it's based on the previous year, the 75 points. So you have an exact number and you know what finish equals what number. So there is that. I mean, obviously at the end of the day, you want to just focus on playing the course the best you can and, you know, playing within yourself, playing your game. But yeah, all those are real factors that you you know, would not ordinarily think about.
So is your plan this year to kind of chase Mondays on the PGA Tour? Is that especially, obviously you've got one early now.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to do both when they make sense. So my plan for this month was to do the Sony, you know, hopefully play a Sony. If not, I would do the Panama Bogota down in Florida, you know, obviously pretty close to my house. And then, you know, do a couple PGA Tour events when they made sense. And then, you know, maybe do the Korn Ferry ones as well, you know, just by looking at what I get in versus what I don't get in versus, you know, logistically, whatever is more.
Or convenient. Just win the Sony.
Well, yeah, that's also an option.
top 10 at the Sony, and the rest is, so again, for people listening, if he top 10s at the Sony, basically he'll like, oh, it's a new year. Like there is no Korn Ferry finals. So like, but top 10 will get you into the next event. And then like you can change the way it works.
Yeah. So with the Korn Ferry finals going away, you can get into final stage of Korn Ferry Tour Q School. Well, I guess they now would just call it PGA Q School, but you can get into final stage of PGA Q School if you're top 150 on the non-member like FedEx Cup. Or
so that would be the number he chases after he top 10s this week.
Yes, you could also, but if you get top 200 from previous year FedEx Cup, you still get conditional. That's decent on the Korn Ferry Tour for the next year. But I'm not sure whether you get into finals at Q School. It might be, you know, second stage.
So okay. I believe it's second stage. So let's go to this week. So you're practicing at home, Austin, but I mean, I assume you haven't teed it up in a competitive event in 21 months. Does that kind of in some ways help you, because maybe your expectations aren't great? You're like, hey, just happy to be out playing pain free. We'll just go see what happens.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, being grateful just to be able to compete again. But then there's, I knew I was playing well, but I know how much different tournament golf is, especially at the top level. You know, if I were to go play a mini tour event, it wouldn't feel nearly as intense as it would playing a Monday qualifier, especially when, you know, you're putting up money to be, you know, to fly out to Hawaii and, you know, stay at a, you know, Airbnb and get a rental car and all that, you know, just to do a Monday. And, you know, we got that job done, but, you know, we still haven't made a check this week. So that's,
yeah, for those that are listening, that Mark Baldwin's quote is always, once you Monday, that's when the real expenses start, especially in Hawaii, because like everything's expensive. So the hotels are not, you can't find the Holiday Inn Express for $90 like you would at some spots.
Thankfully the tour has four host hotels, and I'm at the cheapest one, and there's a shuttle that runs back and forth between the course. So I don't have a rental car. I have, you know, a relatively affordable hotel for the week. So that's all good.
Great. Yeah. Unfortunately your grandfather passed away. Kind of walk me through that timeline on Saturday. I assume you're already in Hawaii, Austin.
I got to Hawaii Friday night. He's been really sick for the last 2-3 weeks. Or he had been sick really, you know, for the last 2-3 weeks, and we knew it was coming. You know, he had had heart complications since his 50s, and, you know, being 86 years old, you know, he broke his hip, you know, a few months back, and his health was just deteriorating in general. And, you know, his heart was, you know, massive, and they had a lot of medications they had him on, but they knew all the medications were going to do were just prolong his life, you know, an extra month at best. And so, you know, my mom had been out there, like went out there the day after Christmas, and because he lives in California, my mom's from California, we live in Tampa. So we knew it was coming, and he went peacefully in his sleep, and it was pretty much the best way he could go. You know, his whole family was there, you know, his son, his daughter, his, you know, ex-wife. Funny, my mom's parents have been divorced for 40 years, but are still best friends. So
no, that's awesome.
You know, it's really sad, but also kind of puts in perspective what matters. And, you know,
and it's just such a cool way to, I mean, he was obviously a fan of yours, and I mean, just a perfect way to kind of talk about his life in settings like this. And, obviously he would want you to play.
Oh, for sure. He would not want me in California right now. They're going to do a little private thing, and he'd probably be angry if I was there. So.
Exactly. All right. We can't get off a call without or a pod without talking about one-handing chipping and how it came to be, Austin. So, like, what was the moment that you were like, one-handed worked? Is there, like, did somebody suggest it? Did you just try it on the course? How did one-handing chipping become a thing?
I was playing the Dakotas Tour in, I think it was 2015 or 2016. I think it was 16 was when I started it. And I'd started as a drill. You know, I'd been struggling with chipping at that point for 2-3 years. And I was doing pretty well with it as a drill, but it didn't really cross my mind to implement it on the course, you know, just because it just seems inferior as a technique. And, you know, that season I was hitting the ball great, but wasn't chipping well, wasn't putting overly well. And I think one practice round I was playing with my friend who's actually caddying for me this week, who lived up there. So I'd stay with his family in Sioux Falls for, you know, most of the events. And I just started doing the practice round, just said, screw it. And I did it pretty well. And then I just decided to implement it. And so it was just kind of dealing with that whole, like, the mindset of, oh, what are people going to think? Right, what if I actually, like, with the nerves, don't chip well with it with one hand. And, you know, it was a big adjustment period. And I'm still, like, self-conscious about it to a certain extent, but it's worked well. And I don't use it on every shot. You know, out here the rough's pretty thick this week. So unless it's a good lie, it's going to be two hands around the greens. And then off the fairways around the greens, the grass is so tight and rolling pure that I might hit a few chips if the shot calls for it, but I might be putting a lot of the time off the greens here.
Yeah. I assume, I mean, that's it, right? Like, from a pro golf perspective, people are going to make assessments if they see assumptions, if they see chipping one-handed. That was a big part of getting over, even though I assume you knew that it was probably best at some point to, like, implement it, just kind of takes of, like, hey, I gotta understand that people are going to say stuff, but I'm going to do what's best for my game.
Yeah. And it was by far the best for my game. I don't think I would be playing if I was chipping the way I was chipping before that. So it really was more of a, you do this or you know, you might not be able to play at a competitive level.
Back to your expectations going into this, Austin, you've played well in PGA Tour events. The talent is undoubtedly there, but you also, I assume there's some realistic expectations from the standpoint if you haven't played an event in 21 months. Is there some of it, like Mark and I always say, if you could bottle up not giving a fuck in pro golf, everybody would be, you know, a great player. Again, back to the same point, does it kind of help you that you're like, hey, I just want to get reps? Or does that just completely go out the window? And, you know, like, this is a PGA Tour event. I know I can compete out here if I play well. There's that internal pressure to perform.
It feels a lot different than it did in 2019 playing, just because I have all the stuff I've been through the last 2 years, and then also having a full season on Korn Ferry in 2020. I'm definitely going to be, you know, very nervous tomorrow. But, you know, I think my caddy and I, my friend Alex Shattuck, who's a golf coach on Instagram, he runs an online golf business. He's great. Anyways,
give the man a plug. Where do you find him? Alex, I see him in the back. Alex, get over here.
Yeah.
Alex, get over here and plug your coaching. Jesus, you're sleeping. Oh, it is early over there.
Yeah, it is early.
Alex, just fine. Plug yourself, dude.
Alex Shattuck Golf on Instagram. I'm kind of sharing all the behind the scenes stuff going on this week. Awesome. But yeah, I mean, we in the Monday at one point, I pretty much just started telling him to focus on the process because nothing else was really going to help us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing we were talking about yesterday is just acknowledging that you're nervous is much better than trying to pretend like, oh, I'm not that nervous. Like, I feel good. You know what I mean? And so that's kind of how I felt on the Monday. Like I was, I told my fiance I was nervous. I told my parents I was nervous. I told Alex I was nervous. And I really was, and I didn't get off to a great start. But you know, once you can kind of dial in, that focus on the task at hand, and if you're playing good golf, you can still play good golf while being nervous, right? So
yeah, I use Justin Lauer quote that he told me all the time. It's like you got to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? Like
I mean,
you're going to be nervous on the first tee, even if you play every week after week. Like it's the first tee, but
it's true.
You just kind of adjust to being comfortable with about being uncomfortable. Is it nice, Austin, to have a friend on the bag? I mean, like a lot of Monday guys, for the people that are listening, you get through, you don't have friend in the area, especially ones in like Hawaii. And so you hire a tour caddy that's hanging around. Not that it's bad. And they know there's advantages to having a veteran caddy that knows the course and those kind of things, but you don't have a relationship of any sort. I assume it's nice, especially considering all the things going on. Your grandfather haven't played in 21 months. A lot of the caddying gig, and I'm not trying to pretend like I'm a professional, just the few that I've done is like,
you're a professional.
It's like more of an emotional step. Like yardage is obviously important, those kind of things, but like, it's just nice to have a friend to be like, dude, I'm nervous, or dude, what the hell's going on? Or wow, things are going better than I thought. And you can just kind of have like a rapport that you wouldn't have with someone you just picked up out of the parking lot.
For sure. And yeah, there's not, there's a level of comfort. I play a lot of golf with Alex. We went to high school together. We know we're both Mike Bender products. And so we kind of have a very similar understanding of the game and, how we play it. And, he's very level headed and easy to be around. There's no added stress. That's the one thing. If you were to get a random caddy, you don't know what you're getting. And you're just worried about like what they're thinking or what they're doing. Whereas with him, I'm not worried about what he's thinking or what he's doing. So like, that's a huge part of it, right?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. Alex, how's the course walking wise? Was it good? Is it a pain in the ass? Cause the course at the Barracuda is brutal. And I'm like, pretend like I'm not out of breath all the time.
This one's so easy, especially because I live on Maui now. And so I was out of Kapalua the other day and those caddies are huffing and puffing. Yeah, yeah. But it's just a nice little stroll in the park.
Nice. Nice. Do you have a carry bag, or did you get a staff bag? Got a carry bag?
Carry bag. I love it.
That's the Monday Q life right there.
Oh, we looked like such jabronis pulling up to the course yesterday. We had
oh, this guy's here for a pro-am on the wrong day.
That's what Alex said. That's what we look like, because we had to drop off the rental car, get shuttled over, and so we had all of our luggage, and just I don't know, didn't look over.
It's the Monday Q life, man.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Everyone asks that. We always talk about this, Mark and I, when we go to a Monday. Do you pack, especially when you go to Hawaii? Do you pack for 7 days, or did you pack for 2 days?
I put a cashmere sweater in case we go to American Express.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, perfect. Perfect. Perfect.
I don't even know if you get top 10, you go to Amex. So I don't know.
I don't even know if you do. You'll get in eventually, but I don't know if it's
in two sweaters just in case we have to go to California.
Man, I love the confidence, dude. I love it. I love it.
It's funny though, because I had no legitimate expectation for that, but my fiance was, really trying to talk me up. Like, you're going to, go out, you're going to qualify, you're going to do great. And like, you should plan to go to California. And I was like, well, I need to put sweaters in. She's like, well, if you get top 10 in Sony, you can afford a sweater or two afterwards.
It's true. It's
I was like, yeah, you I just don't want to, I don't want to add to my closet. So I'm just going to put it
sweater. Yeah. I mean, hopefully a sponsor picks you up and you have like a legit clothes deal by the Amex, I mean,
well, I do. I wear Coolabar.
All right. Coolabar. What's Coolabar?
Coolabar is started, it's just like for sun protection.
Yeah.
Kind of light, lightweight, athletic, cool feel, long sleeve stuff. They make short sleeve stuff as well. But they make, great golf polos, great golf shorts and pants. David, they actually just, a couple a year or two ago signed with David Ledbetter. So David Ledbetter worked with him on designing a lot of their stuff because he's really into sun protection.
Obviously hugely important for golf.
Yeah. And you know, I wore it in 2020 and it's great to be wearing it again. I hope to wear it for a long time.
Awesome. Well, Austin, it's a great story. Austin and I have talked a lot throughout the last couple of years, and it's awesome to see you back, man. It's awesome to see you get through. And,
thank you.
All the best to the family. Health, most importantly.
Yeah, that is it.
And let's might as well go win the Sony, dude.
Yeah. And thank you for all you do covering us and, you know, really just shining light on the crazy world of mini tour and Monday qualifying life, and you know, anything that isn't the glamour of the fully exempt on the PGA Tour.
Yes, thank you, Austin. But as the trailer dropped today of the Netflix, I thought about like we're doing a show that's about players like yourself, and it's going to be out next week. But I was like, again, I know there's pressure to be a top player in the world. I'm not trying to pretend like there's not, but there was four shots in the trailer of players getting off private jets. And I was like, I don't know. That's not the pro golf final, you know? Alex, for people that are just listening and not watching, Alex and Austin are obviously sharing a room. They're like, have a double bed in their backs. This is the glamour. Yeah. Look at that sweet view. Wow. That deck is nice, dude. Yeah. You both can't be out there at the same time, but it's nice. What are we in? A Holiday Inn? Is this a Hawaii only?
I don't want to say the name to make it look bad.
All right.
It's just a typical
nice, like, Holiday Inn Express type hotel,
and it's a prime location. It's walking distance from all the best restaurants and stuff here, and you know the shuttle back and forth is great too. So I'm not complaining. I've stayed in way worse,
dude. Trust me. I mean, again, I have so much as I've caddied a little bit more. I have so much more respect for you guys. Not that I didn't anyway, but like Mark and I were in a Quality Inn at a Monday like at RSM. And I was snoring and he threw a pillow at me in the middle of the night. He's like, I think we could like afford two Quality Inn rooms, you know, like it was 70, $68 or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, maybe we could purge or like splurge for two rooms, you know, so you don't, we don't sleep. Austin, Alex, thanks so much, guys. Awesome. And, go play well. Good to see you back, man.
Yeah. Well, I'll look forward to seeing what you guys are going to put out next week.
Awesome. Thanks.